ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday on the back of all the Monday night shows that set the agenda in the footy landscape. Corbin Middlemass with you alongside the Footscray heartthrob, Bob Murphy.
There we go, Corbin. Nice to see you. Can't believe it's Tuesday again.
Here we are. We're back around. What a week in football without trying to sound like Eddie Maguire. Holy smokes.
The truism of that is ringing loud and clear. This has been a week like no other to me anyway.
Yeah. It's been an awful week in many ways. I mean, the footy on the field was enthralling. We had five games decided by 9 points or less. Huge attendances. Maybe that's a knock-on effect from Gather Round, as it was put to me yesterday. You know, everyone starved the footy for a week, come back in huge numbers. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, really, the storyline that's dominated the footy landscape is the events of Thursday night and the fallout from that. The latest information here is shortly after we went off air last night on AFL Monday, the club statement from the Carlton Football Club around Elijah Hollands. The Carlton Football Club can confirm that Elijah has been admitted to hospital this evening. While the club acknowledges the public interest, it asks that the privacy of Elijah and his family be respected. This request for privacy extends to the media to please not report or speculate on Hollands' location and private health information. So that's the latest we've got from the Carlton mm-hmm. Football Club. I think it's fair to say, Bob, that a reservoir of sympathy to Elijah and his family.
Yeah, I think it doesn't go without being said, because our care and sympathy and kindness goes to the individual, and he's now being looked after by the right people. So that's the one side of the coin, and we put that over there. And quite rightly, for this sort of forum, the conversation moves to the other side around process and what happened and how the sport will change, what this means for the footy club who was responsible for their players on the night, and dig into it.
This is the most important thing I think we do as the press and the footy media. There's lots of it that, you know, we're talking about a ball with air in it and everything else. But and we got a lot of similar feedback last night. I'm sure you did on your radio show this morning about people saying, "Why don't you move on? Why do you talk about it or whatever?" And maybe it's a sign of modern times. And I sort of, without trying to extrapolate too much, where you think about what's happened to the media over the last 10 years, for example, globally in mm-hmm. geopolitics and everything else, where information's never been more available. And yet people's ability to decipher high quality from low quality information has never been worse. And then you've got bad actors that essentially put information out there to say, hey, all that information's no good. And then people throw their hands in the air and they don't know what to believe. And so then they end up sort of following these things almost like they follow their sports teams. Their information they receive is very curated for them. And essentially the tough conversations that are critically important that the media has on a regular basis to hold authority figures to account, Their influence or their power gets whittled away and isn't as strong as what it once was. This is so important for the game that we get answers out of the Carlton Football Club. And we sit here on Tuesday morning, Bob, and this was pointed out on one of the shows last night, and we spoke about it all weekend, that the one thing we haven't heard yet from Carlton is whatever happened, we let Elijah down. That we haven't heard that from them in any way, shape or form. And it the only place where your mind goes is this a litigious thing? Are they basically trying to protect themselves against future litigation down the line? And you think that cannot be front and center candidate at this moment, that we haven't even had that from Carlton now Tuesday morning after a Thursday night episode.
I'm trying to keep an even keel here, and I'm trying to keep a mild temper, but even just the inference that's holding them back, which is not what you're saying necessarily, but it's a possibility.
Well, it makes you
kind
think
of churn. The truth sets you free.
Yep.
And first, it probably pisses you off.
But even in this scenario, like that as an overall statement to say, hey, whatever happened, clearly, we all could have done more. It's like the Spike Lee film. It's like, do the right thing. Like that is the right thing, isn't it? Just to come out and say, hey, whatever's happening here, naturally, in retrospect, we could have handled it differently.
And I imagine you're probably in a similar position as most of us are. We look at Carlton and we look at the situation and say, did you not know? Did you just think your player was having a poor performance night? Because if you didn't know anything, if you didn't know at all of those people, Well, that's a big cross, unacceptable. If you did know, how many of you knew and how many of you did nothing? Well, yeah. that's probably worse. But until we get those answers, we're just left to churn.
Yeah,
and it doesn't get better.
No.
That churn gets worse and worse and worse the more you think about it, certainly from my point of view.
Yeah, and I think the more time that passes, the more suspicion you think, yeah, why is it taking so long? You know, from a Thursday night thing to now Tuesday, some of those questions surely should be easy enough to answer, shouldn't they? That's a pretty short term. That's enough time, you'd think, to be able to gather information.
Feels like that.
Yeah. Here's Jared Waitley on AFL 360 on Fox Footy last night.
A couple of years ago, we had a life-threatening incident involving Christian Petrarca.
Yep.
The immediate concern was to protect against future litigation. I think that was the mode of the AFL. I think that was the mode of the club.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And then it played out over a long period of time. I doubt we're any better off for what that player went through in that circumstance. And should it happen again, with no confidence could you say that we would be better off. There was no formal investigation beyond the summary ticking off of the medical process, which was immediate and jarring. So you have to find out, root and branch, what happened here.
Mm.
And then I'm far less interested in punishment and much more interested in so what to do.
Yeah.
Because that circumstance and the blazing light of Thursday night can't repeat.
This is the heart of what we do, isn't it? That essentially if people don't feel like the game is going to protect the welfare of its participants, whether it's Christian Petrarca or in this case or any other case. That speaks to parents that are basically, are they going to be reluctant to put their kids into junior sport and what the game looks like going forward and particularly in the sport of Australian rules football. This is so important, not just for Carlton, but for the whole industry, that we get some kind of satisfactory outcome here in a way we didn't in the Petrarca case.
In one way, it's really, really complex and nuanced, and there's so many different shades to it. And then in another sense, it's actually quite simple.
Yep.
This player was not himself, and it looked unnatural, and it was unnerving to all of us. What did you know? Why didn't you act?
Mm. Yep.
We can sympathise. Like you can, there's a level of, like, but if you just say nothing, if you're not telling us anything, then we start to become more pointed and more more angry,
yeah,
basically.
So even, and I've said this all weekend, but separate to the welfare side of it, the footy aspect here. So it felt like they were almost running around one short the other night for 72 minutes. How does it not get identified? That bother anyone in the coach's box to be able to say, hey, I don't reckon this is working for us from a performance point of view.
Well, I suppose, I mean, players can have poor nights, you know. It's happened before. I mean, it's a real drop-off for such a talented player. So there's, most weeks, sides, as much as they want even contribution, you might have to carry a couple of players who are just, for whatever reason, having an off night. And it seems like that's what Carlton thought was happening when, it now feels like it's something so much more significant. But there's having a poor night, and then there's non-contributors, and that makes it really, really tough.
The rest of the weekend, and again, our thoughts with Elijah, and hopefully we know more about this in the
sincerely, genuinely.
Future. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The rest of it, there's always plenty to pick apart out of the Monday night shows. Let's jump across to Channel 7, the agenda setters last night, and the Zach Butters, Nick Foote incident, which concluded last night after what, 8 days or whatever it was. And in the end, the outcome is that there's no outcome, that the case was thrown out completely. This is Caroline Wilson on the episode last night.
The hearing was thrown out because of the shambolic hearing last week. It should have been mediated in the first place. And the great irony out of all of this is that Nick Foote, the umpire who was so angry about his integrity being questioned, and fair enough, his job with Sportsbet has come under more scrutiny from two of the major newspapers, The Age and The Australian, over the weekend. The football fraternity and football bosses are now raising questions about this, what a bad look it is, and even some senior umpiring fraternity members are questioning it as well. Why are the AFL allowing this? Because of the law.
So it was interesting that the AFL council confirmed before the outcome that they wouldn't push for a retrial, even if essentially the appeals board found in Butters' favour, which ultimately they did. Caroline Wilson used the word shambolic. It felt like that the whole way through, including the appeals hearing last night, which I'm sure you're aware of, Bob, where the Port Adelaide lawyer had to mute his mic on his Zoom and turn his camera off to stop his dog barking in the background. I mean, this is a billion-dollar industry.
Look, I'm straddling two worlds here. This is our hard-hitting Tuesday discussion of around the meaty topics of football, but I'm also on Brekkie Radio. So it was an absolute gift this morning for Rochelle and I.
It's a layup.
I just had a ribbon on it. It was just a half volley outside. I stumped, just throw a bit of willow at it. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. I suppose, look, from my point of view, the silver lining of it is that I think it got to the right place. Justice actually prevailed in the most absurd circumstances of it, you know, topsy-turvy being found guilty and then it being thrown out with all the technicality. But it just feels like with all of the economics in footy, with all of the progression in so many facets of the game, the tribunal system seems to be more archaic than it was in 1985.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
When it was extremely formal.
Yeah.
That's when it was very formal.
So are you one you would like to see an overhaul of the system? I know Damien Barrett's been big on, hey, we should just get rid of one of the lines. The line should go immediately from the MRO should be in-house, the match review officer, mm-hmm. and that is essentially the tribunal. That's it. It's one. And if you want to appeal that decision, you can, but there's no second step to go to the tribunal after the MRO. Where all the lawyers came into it and stuff was essentially the Andrew Dunkley case in 96.
The James Heard one,
when basically they got taken all the way to the High Court so he could, you know, play in the grand final, and there, so many lawyers at, you know, at 10 paces, yeah, and everything else. And then essentially we got to this point where everything's so lawyered up to basically try and protect the game from going to, you know, through the court system if someone doesn't like an outcome.
Interesting. I like the idea of it being far more succinct, whatever that is. Mm. I'm old enough to have come through that era where it was very formal tribunal and suits, and it did seem a bit ridiculous at certain times. I think there was a melee between the Bulldogs and St Kilda. There was 35 of us in the room dressed up. It was ridiculous. But there's that side of it, and then there's, you know, this unfortunate situation where you've got people who they're not full-time and they're trying to, you know,
wrangle pets and everything
all
else.
All sorts of meat.
We got to get off Zoom, don't we? Like, Zoom's it was fun during COVID and everything else. It's 2026. That was 2020 and 2021. And it's, at the very least, can we just go to the footy club or
stiffen it up a little bit,
proper,
I think.
Proper telecommunications hookup something. As opposed to, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not sure everyone just at their own home office and everything dialing in is the look that we're going for. And then talk about great irony and just how ludicrous the whole thing was. Zach Butters played on the weekend, went and got another fine. He got done for striking. So we've spent thousands of dollars defending Zach's honour and everything else, and, you know, to essentially have this fine thrown out. He went out there on the weekend and he got another one just for a separate incident.
Well, are they connected? 3 weeks ago, mooted about what will be on offer, how much you'll get paid, and then in the 2 weeks in, Zach's gone, I've got a bit to throw around. Bit of this, a bit of that.
Footy Classified last night. So this follows on from Andrew Bassett's response to the Ross Lyon press conference. So Ross's behaviour in the presser, you know, going back at the journos, continuing asking questions, drew some criticism from Liam Pickering, amongst others, about his disrespectful nature, as he dubbed it, towards journalists. Andrew Bassett defended him on ABC Melbourne yesterday with Raf Epstein, where essentially he said, ask silly questions, win silly prizes, was the short response to all of that. You can catch up on that in ABC AFL Daily from the Monday episode if you want to know more. But naturally, the conversation was picked up, the audio was played, and it caused a bit of debate on Footy Classified last night.
He lives in a world, Sam, where he's not challenged, and he likes it that way. No one in his world challenges him. And
what do you mean?
Well, St Kilda Footy Club doesn't challenge him. It never did the first time around. Fremantle didn't for a long time until it got ugly win-loss, and then
Hang on, what do you mean that St Kilda Footy Club don't
Who challenges him in that structure? Now, he'll tell us that Lenny
so
Hayes
you think
keeps
the CEO,
him.
CEO Carl Delino challenges him?
I don't think he does, no. Okay. But again, that's Ross the boss. That's why I've personally been calling Ross a boss for 15 years. And I like him combative. I don't mind that style of him, but there is a component that I think does get into the respect category with people that he knows he can beat in an argument.
Big deal, no big deal?
I'm stride for stride with Damien Barrett today. It's two from two.
Yes.
With Damien Barrett and I. Yeah, I think that's where I have sort of landed with it for a long time and almost used to that style of the way things are, that Ross has his corner and he fights for his corner, but I don't see too much of going against the grain. I can't think of too many occasions where it feels like it's much of a groupthink.
Yeah, it's
the interesting. The press conference element is kind of fascinated by that and what the expectations are. And I mean, when coaches are rude to journal, I just don't know. I don't know. It's a very basic thing, but I don't know why we would need to be rude to anyone.
And naturally, it was challenged that, well, what's a stupid question? You know, at the end of the day, like, well, I don't think the questions that Ross was getting were particularly stupid. I think they came from a very senior journalist, and they, you know, he's there to ask the questions. Ross tried to turn it back on him, and I thought I really liked his response, where he basically said, "Hey, no one cares what I think. It's not my press conference; it's your press conference. I'm here to ask the questions. You're there to answer them how you see fit." But if St Kilda's happy with that kind of presentation, and that's how they want their football club to be represented to their fans and their members, and it is, I'd like as well the call out about and as you say about going against the grain. So we've mentioned this a number of times. AFL Saturday, the award winning. Able to pick up an award last year for our show, which is 12 o'clock on a Saturday. Last year, we had 17 of the 18 senior coaches on. There was only one guy that wouldn't come on a chat to us. And we tried our absolute best to see if we could get him. Didn't want to do it.
Didn't want to do it.
So it's myself, it's Luke Ball, who played under him and then went to Collingwood and obviously won a premiership, and Mick Malthouse, who he coached against for many years. But we tried multiple different angles. He didn't want to do it. And the Saints told us, hey, we'll endeavour to do it early in the next season. We're 6 weeks in. We've tried a couple of times. Haven't heard back. The media manager has left the St Kilda Football Club early in the new season. So if we all know what it is, at least now it's sort of...
The way Ross handles those situations is up to him and St Kilda.
Yeah.
It's really the other side of it, isn't it? Just to keep asking the questions that need to be asked.
Yep. And if Andrew Bassett's happy with it and that they've given him the keys to run it how they see fit, that's up to them. Here is Adam Uze last night on AFL 360. I think you'll like this one, Bob, talking about why he got out of the coach's box and was down on the bench with his players on Sunday in that heavy defeat at North Melbourne.
When you're up there, you're coaching the technical and tactical. You can coach their heads, but downstairs, you start coaching the heart. So I could put my arm around Sammy Lawler and we can get the message across quicker with the technical, but that sort of information needs to come from upstairs. But right now, you get a pure connection. You can coach their hearts and their spirit and their energy and make sure they're thinking the right things, because they are young. Like, while they're sitting there, we feel like, and I feel, I think I know what they're thinking about, but when you're down there, you start to understand it's just like they've got 7 minutes and the things that are going through their brains aren't what we think they are. So just helping him with that when they're down there.
Adam Uze on 360 on Fox Footy. It's a fun conversation for us in the media, the bench versus the box. What do you make of his reasoning behind it?
I mean, it makes pretty obvious sense, doesn't it? He didn't say it there, and I don't want to put words in Adam Uze's mouth, because I think he would probably agree with what I'm about to say next, but it's not coach from the box, treat your players with intellect. Treat coach from the bench, coach from the heart.
Yep.
It is literally the yin yang. The way you can talk to a player on the phone can touch their head and heart, and just as equally on the bench, you can put your arm around them and also move the human battleships around. So I like the idea of coaches going back and forth, not like a yo-yo. I want the coaches to get their steps up. I don't think they need to be going back and forth too often. but if it was me, I would use both levers.
And Sam Mitchell's big on that, isn't he? Like, you'll see him halfway through the quarter all of a sudden charge down when momentum's against them. I think he did it twice on Saturday in the win over Port Adelaide. And Connor Nash was asked about it on the ABC afterwards, and he basically said, oh, look, I saw him there. I said he didn't have to say anything. I knew that it was like, right, we need a lock in here. It's almost like his presence on the bench, where it was almost like a flag or one of those signs or whatever to say, yeah, it's time to lock him.
It's eternally surprising to me of some players' inability to read the mood of their coach. Just look at their shoulders.
Yeah.
Just look at them, tell you everything you need to know of just how wound up they are, or just how Relax, though.
Yeah. The Tigs were a hot button issue last night. Back over to Channel 9 and Footy Classified.
Look, I've been saying for weeks now, Sam, I feel for Adam Uzé in this whole situation. He's been put into an impossible situation. You now, as we talk about this, have a look at the injury list that he's now being subjected to, because there's now no real threat to any person in the team. The problem for Adam Uzé, he's now three seasons into a coaching career with only 7 wins to his name, 45 losses, and a percentage this year which is effectively half the amounts of points scored as there are against. It's not only heading one way, this. And I know he's contracted until 2028, but if he survives...
What do you mean it's only heading one way?
They're not winning a game of footy any time soon, I wouldn't have thought.
But are you alluding to the fact that the coach is already under the pump?
No, they've contracted him until 2028.
Yeah, but we know that contracts don't mean much.
I've got no doubt he's going into 2027.
Okay.
But when I'm saying it's heading only one way, it's just heading more losses.
So 0-6 at the moment, and I think a pretty awful percentage, around 53.
Mm. We often talk in footy, don't we, that it's a win-loss game, it's a brutal game, and that's, you know, in the game of winning and losing. But for some clubs, it's how you lose. And that's the thing at the moment with Richmond, that their circumstances exceeded expectations last year, this year, questions. But when you get, when it's 50-plus regularly, that's when it hurts. That's when the question marks come. I mean, I must admit, I've been a little bit surprised by the level of heat that's gone on Richmond. So I'm a little bit cooler on it for now. Yeah. I mean, you need to arrest the beltings.
Yeah. The only thing I'm hot on here, and Essendon copped a lot of criticism, quite rightfully, last year, they had a catastrophic injury list. Richmond's had the worst injury list over the last 2.5 years. So if we say half the first 6-7 weeks of this season plus the last two. So in 2024, they lost the most games through injury. In 2025, they were the second most behind Essendon. And prior to round 6, they were the third most. Mm. And on the weekend, they picked up 5 more injuries. So Banks got the collarbone. You can't do much about that. Same with the concussion. Mm-hmm. Rioli, though, did a hamstring. They got 2 more injuries in the VFL in Taranto and Piker. They picked this kid out of the draft the year before, which was Josh Smiley, who was the presumptive number one, I think, in his underage year.
Yep.
Saw him at training. I went down to Richmond training early last year before a Tigers game that I had, and I remember seeing him on the track, and the guy I was sitting with from the club, I essentially pointed to him and said, "Who's that guy? Like, this guy looks like this modern prototype beast, can kick the ball, 50-plus off both feet and, getting around, and just looks amazing on the track. Haven't even seen him." And so... Mm-hmm. My fear here is that, Uzé's doing this rebuild, but a bit like what happened last year with the Bombers, it's almost a gap year. It's almost you don't get anything out of it if you can't get 15, 20 games into your core group of top picks. So I think they've taken like 13 kids inside the top 20 or 30 over the last couple of years. And we've had like 3 of them running around on the weekend. It's not as if we've seen, 8 or 9 of these guys, because most of them have been injured. So
we don't know who Richmond are yet.
Yeah.
And they don't know who they are yet.
But it's hard to say you're building anything, isn't it? If you're putting games into guys that ultimately, and Uzé even said as much last night on 360, they're probably not going to be there when they're fully loaded. But the question is, when are they ever going to be fully loaded?
It's a wait and see. You didn't mention Taj Houghton. We're not meant to have favourites. Yeah. He is one. He's mine. He's mine. he's not mine.
You've been strong on him.
I've been strong. No, but I really like him. He's not out there. So... Exceeded last year at the moment, underwhelmed, but a little bit. Yeah. So a little bit early, I think.
I'd be more forgiving if all their stars were playing. Like, as in, when I say stars, top draft bombers. Picks. We haven't seen enough of them. And I know that. I think they changed the S&C guy at the end of 2024. So had the disastrous year. New S&C comes in. Yep. So he's had 1 year, similar issues. Now he's in his second year, injury list swelling. So, speaking of swelling injury lists. Your Bulldogs.
Heavy heart.
Last week we sat here and we played the thoughts of Lee Matthews, greatest player of all time, who said, "Why on earth is Sam Darcy not playing in the ruck more?"
Yeah.
So you know what happened on the weekend? He played a bit in the ruck. And this is what Kane Corn said on the Agenda Setters on Channel 7 last night.
"I can't believe that you would risk your most valuable asset, arguably the most valuable asset and most unique asset in the game, to start this game in the ruck. And I've said it for 2 years. As you said, he injured that left knee, the same one in April last year. What is clear when they opted not to repair the knee, that it was going to be vulnerable. It was going to be more vulnerable than had he had surgery, which would have ruled him out for the year. So knowing all of that, I just cannot believe that you would put this player into the ruck, the centre bounce, where it is so risky to do that.
Well, I've been there.
And I guarantee you, Nick, I guarantee you, we'll never, ever, ever see, and I'm sure of this, we'll never see Sam Darcy in the ruck, well, centre bounce ever again.
3% against Essendon in the ruck, 0% against the Hawks, where we played the Lee Matthews comments last week, 24% against Geelong in the ruck. Does his ACL.
Corbin, you are very, very good, because I didn't think there was any way that I could get a smile or even half a laugh out of the Sam Darcy situation, because I know the young man. I really like him. I love his dad. Mm. I love the family. I'm very close with them. So in the space of a week, though, can't play him in the ruck.
Yep.
Did play...
This is our industry, isn't it?
It's
an opinion-based game.
Of course it is. It's just an unfortunate situation. Yeah. I mean, the injury, really unfortunate.
Do you even think that him playing in the ruck had anything to do with him doing his knee up forward?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I must admit...
How could that stand up to any rigour whatsoever?
It'd be different if he did the knee while he was in the ruck.
I need to lie down. I need to lie down. I'll try as best as I can. Yeah.
But it's the premise that sides. Hey, he gets banged up in the ruck, and then when he goes forward, the knee's weakened, and so then when he's
I'll try my best, but it's just one of those things that he plays at full throttle wherever he plays. There's a change of direction, classic mechanism. They call it the corkscrew mechanism, and that's what pops the ACL. Nothing to do with position. It's just one of those moments, unfortunately.
So he had the injury last year with the hyperextension, and then this year, obviously, has the ACL buckle. Mick Malthouse alluded to this the other night. He said Glenn Jakovich had a similar thing, that it almost weakens ligaments in the knee, and then you're more susceptible perhaps to do an ACL, which I think the Bulldogs knew. They said that by the statement. But I think if you're a young player and you can dodge surgery, and then people forget, he came back and he was in the All-Australian squad. So it's not as if he came back last year and limped his way through the end of the year or whatever. Like, the guy's playing some top-line football where we end the year thinking, could this guy be the best player in the game in a year and a half or whatever it turns out to be? So I don't know. What were the Bulldogs meant to do? Say, you know what? We got told he can avoid surgery, but we're going to put him under the knife anyway.
I think we're all just a bit upset. And I don't mean just Bulldog supporters. It's football supporters. Fans. You just want to see the closest thing since Paul Salmon and think, what could be? He'll be all right. He'll be fine. Sam will get back. The ACL reconstruction's now. He'll be back next year. The beauty about Sam, and the reason why your heart's in your mouth, is because he just gives it all every time.
He should never, ever, ever play in round six ever again.
Well, that's true of the whole family.
That's incredible. So round six, 2006.
Five?
21 years.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
His dad did it against Geelong in Geelong, same venue, corresponding round 21 years earlier. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 20 years, he has the hyperextension last year against the Saints. Fast forward 12 months, tears the ACL round six. Just eerie.
Spooky. Yep. Spooky.
So the broader conversation around the Dogs is, what do they do now? They were decimated on the weekend. I mean, you look at the guys that they lost, the whole spine decimated. So Lobb, O'Donnell, English, Darcy. So that's your fullback, centre-half back, your ruckman, and your centre-half forward, essentially all out, plus Liberatore on top of that. So looking for solutions. We like this. Constructive feedback in the from our media friends. And one of my favourite shows, On the Couch on Fox Footy last night, Jordan Lewis threw this up as perhaps an answer to the Dogs' woes in their back six.
Their defence lacks leadership. It lacks fight at the moment. And I think they've got too many ball watchers in their back end and not enough ball users and not enough leadership. And I think they've got the answer amongst the group or the assets that they've got.
Who is it?
And I think it's Bontempelli.
Wow.
I think a lot of the conversation would be, well, why don't you put Bontempelli forward now that Darcy's out and what a threat he can be ahead of the ball. I think we've all played with great defenders and great communicators. So I think Bontempelli, a great communicator, a great leader, will command respect in that defensive end, but also a good ball user. So you look at their ball users in their back end and they've dropped away. Bailey Dale was a top 10 player in the league for the last couple of years. He's dropped to 105. So you're not getting much out of his ball use and you're not getting much out of his defensive work as well. So I just think it's a glaring issue. They're stacked in the midfield. A Bontempelli to half back would change their fortunes going forward.
halfback Bond. What about it?
Look, you know how I feel about the halfback flank fraternity.
Yes.
Far too often maligned. The Bont is my favourite player, maybe ever. Mm. Look, a part of me would love to see him go to halfback. When I hear Jordan Lewis say that, though, I think no, I don't, that's not what I think will happen, and it's not what I think should happen. It just seems a little bit premature. Not saying that there's not issues with you know, just how it's functioning at the moment, but I would say that the issues of the defence throughout the field, you won't see Bont go back. You might see him go forward if Norton went back a bit more. Mm. I could imagine that, but no, I don't think Marcus will be at halfback anytime soon.
Norton's not. I think Bont's more chance to go back than Aaron Norton.
Well, that's interesting. Now that's a question.
Is now the time? What would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Well, I would have Norton as a swingman.
Okay.
I would have Norton as starting centre halfback.
That feels like that's a soft sound to Bevo saying, look, I'm not saying
I know he won't listen to me. He knows far too, but he knows better than that. I would create the position for Aaron Norton of a genuine swingman where he starts the game centre halfback.
Yep.
Sets them up, gives them that solid grounding, and then at the right time, swing him forward as a match winner. And Bont doing a bit of that himself forward.
It's like Adam Hunter.
Yeah.
Back in the day with the West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. They've got Croft, obviously, down there, so all eyes will be on him. Played some good footy when he was, you know, the third banana last year, often in that forward line, and I hope there's not sort of unreasonable expectations.
I just think at the moment, like, the Dogs have had a rough couple of weeks in a bit of spasm at the moment. Let's moving Bont to halfback is maybe a little rash.
So you're not making big calls at this stage? You're not putting a line through them for premiership contention like that?
No, not yet. Not yet.
They were here's a little stat I got from Champion Data yesterday. They were the number one rated offense in the game when Darcy was out last year. So even though Norton's form struggled, the team overall still were the most high powered offense without Darcy playing.
I feel like this has been a tough show for the Darcys.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily so. I'm going to step in for the family and
I'm trying to find some optimism from Bulldog's point of view.
Okay, all right. That's a different way to look at it.
Maybe it won't all be
just
so
last
bad.
Week it was lethal having a crack at Sam. This week it's Kane. Better off without him.
I'm the other way. I'm saying, look, that they can still be the number one offense without him. And then when he comes back in, he might just put him over the top.
I know. I'm just getting a bit defensive. Yeah, a bit sensitive.
I like it. It's been a big week. It's been a big show. Bob, appreciate your insights as always here on ABC AFL Daily.
Always cool.
You're home for the footy conversation each week right here on ABC AFL Daily.